This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to VOA Africa. Thank you for joining us. I'm Yeheyes Wuhib in Washington. Here's what's coming up on Africa News Tonight.
We've heard different versions of where these talks might be held, possibly in Kenya, possibly in Tanzania. And so would the leaders of those countries take a more active role?
That was Cameron Hudson at the Atlantic Council's Africa Center on Ethiopia-Tigray peace talks. Details coming up. Also, a ceremony has been held in the DRC to bury the gold crown tooth of independence hero Patrice Lumumba. These stories and more on Africa News Tonight. But first, our top story. In Sudan, thousands of people took the streets today in the largest anti-military protests in recent months, demanding military leaders step down from power. Military authorities announced strict security measures, including the closure of bridges linking Khartoum and other cities ahead of the marches. Authorities also shut down the internet and disrupted local telephone communications all over Sudan this morning. Nabil Biagio spoke with VOA reporter Michael Atit in Khartoum.
In the capital, Khartoum, today, heavy security deployment could be seen significantly around the government essential institutions and along the streets and before the bridges linking the three cities of Khartoum, Omdurman, and Khartoum North. And then these bridges are also like blocked to prevent protesters from approaching the presidential palace. The protesters announced earlier that their final destination is towards the presidential palace in Khartoum. As we speak, internet services and telephone lines have been shut down since morning. Only international calls, you know, can go through. At around 11 a.m. local time, the protesters started moving from the area called Bashdar in Khartoum South, you know, trying to make their way towards the presidential palace. So police used tear gas against them, and as they tried to head to the presidential palace. So the protesters in Khartoum lately, around afternoon this afternoon, the protesters managed to break the first police roadblock near the Sherwani bus station in Khartoum as they keep on, you know, moving towards the palace. So as we speak, the protesters are less than 1 kilometer away from the presidential palace. So we don't know exactly if they will make their way towards the palace, or there might be, a heavy deployment again to prevent them from reaching the presidential palace in Khartoum.
Yes, Michael, you're speaking with us from Khartoum South in El Kalakla. What is the atmosphere like where you are? Are you able to move around, and what are people saying?
I moved around this morning. I went up to the nearby local market. I could see some shops open, and especially, vegetables and other food stuff. People are, you know, purchasing their day-to-day living things. And I could see also some few minibuses and buses are going towards Khartoum or going towards what's called the central market. So the life seems to be, this side seems to be normal as such, but yet there are few movement only along the road. There are few vehicles that could be seen on the road, and most people are just sitting, you know, along the road, along the roadside, and many are inside their houses, you know, looking after their, you know, their families and other stuff like that.
And finally, the head of the UN mission in Sudan warned security forces against using violence to repress protesters. U.S. officials here did the same. Are there any reported casualties or injuries so far today?
I only came across a report of one protester got injured, and according to the reports, medical reports here, it was due to live bullet in Omdurman, and a few other, maybe tens or dozens of them have been, you know, experiencing, you know, difficulties in breathing, especially towards the among the protesters who are heading towards the presidential palace in Khartoum, because there was a heavy use of, you know, tear gas by the police just to prevent them, you know, from advancing towards the presidential palace.
That was Nabil Biagio with VOA South Sudan in Focus program, speaking with journalist Michael Atit in Khartoum. News wires are reporting that at least two demonstrators have been killed in clashes with security forces. After 2 years of a war that has taken an enormous toll on both sides, the Ethiopian government and Tigrayan forces are showing willingness to come to the negotiating table. This week, the Ethiopian government named a team of seven negotiators to participate in possible peace talks. And the Tigrayan leader, Debretsion Gebremichael, recently wrote an open letter to the international community stating his willingness to participate in peace talks as well. Cameron Hudson is with the Center for Strategic and International Studies. He also served as Director of Africa Affairs in the George W. Bush administration. I asked for his thoughts on a possible peace deal between the rivals.
Well, I think in this first round, the round of negotiations that has been talked about now, that really is about, you know, a permanent truce and ceasefire. It is about, you know, it is about disarming and demobilizing armies that are squared off against each other. It is about bringing down the military tension within the country so that you can then create conditions for what has been talked about as a broader kind of national dialogue.
The Ethiopia-Eritrea rapprochement, would that be a sticking point in the negotiations?
Well, it's a great question. And I think that, you know, what we have not seen or heard is under what circumstances or whether Eritrea would participate in any part of these talks. It's clear that President Isaias has continued to, you know, mask his role, his ongoing role inside of Tigray. And there have been very few signals from Asmara that it is interested in any kind of peace negotiations with the Tigrayans. And so there is a question as to whether or not lasting peace can really be achieved between Tigray and Addis Ababa if Eritrea is not somehow included in those talks or brought to heel in some way. I think that's a kind of an open question right now, and clearly one for negotiators. But again, Isaias has been a very recalcitrant leader, has not subjected himself to peace talks in quite a long time, and has achieved many of the goals that he laid out for himself, although not the ultimate goal of destroying the TPLF. And so there is a question as to whether or not he will continue to play a spoiler role in the country and in the region, and what, if any, response will be from central government in Ethiopia, who, as you rightly point out, signed its own peace deal with Isaias several years ago. But if that peace deal then comes at the expense of an internal peace deal within Ethiopia, then I think you know, we could be facing additional difficulties down the road, which is why I think it's so essential that somehow Eritrea be brought into these conversations and subjected to whatever peace arrangement gets negotiated.
And how about the African Union? Special Envoy, former Nigerian President Olusegun Obasanjo, has been traveling within Ethiopia in recent weeks.
Well, the government of Ethiopia has said that they would be willing and in fact expect that these negotiations would take place under the auspices of the African Union. There's, I guess, a question as to whether or not President Obasanjo would be the lead negotiator or mediator in those talks. He has thus far been, but there's been a lot of criticism of Obasanjo's role. He has been very opaque. He has not delegated well to others. And so I think there is a question as to whether he might be the right person to take this on. We've heard different versions of where these talks might be held, possibly in Kenya, possibly in Tanzania. And so would the leaders of those countries take a more active role under the auspices of the African Union in helping to facilitate these talks? These, I think, are still questions, but clearly we have to get to a place where both the Tigrayans and the Abiy government feel comfortable with both the venue and the mediator for these talks to be able to take hold. And thus far, we've only got, you know, very vague outlines of what they would be willing to accept.
That was Cameron Hudson with the Center for Strategic and International Studies speaking with me here in Washington. A ceremony has been held in the Democratic Republic of Congo to bury the gold crown tooth of independence hero Patrice Lumumba more than 60 years after he was assassinated. The tooth is the only part of his body known to exist after his remains were dissolved in acid after his murder in January 1961. The Belgian policeman who oversaw the disposal took the tooth as a trophy. It was returned to Lumumba's family last week and has toured several parts of the DRC in a coffin. People have been able to pay their respects ahead of the funeral ceremony in the capital, Kinshasa. President Felix Tshisekedi, Lumumba's family, and other dignitaries are at the service before the coffin was transferred to a specially built mausoleum. A large crowd gathered in the public square where the ceremony was held. Lumumba was the country's first prime minister and one of the leaders of the struggle for independence. He was also seen as one of the most prominent voices in Africa's anti-colonial movement and for Pan-Africanism. Today marks 62 years since the former colonial power Belgium relinquished control of the vast country. But it viewed Lumumba as a barrier to its efforts to maintain influence as well as its hold on two important economic interests. The newly appointed president of the Pan-African Parliament has vowed to use Africa's legislature to fight a number of ills on the continent. Chief Fortuna Charumbura, a member of Zimbabwe's parliament, was elected unopposed at the parliament's headquarters in South Africa after the African Union directed that the top posts of the parliament will be held on rotation by Africa's five regions. Tuso Kumalo reports from Johannesburg.
Chief Charumbira, who contested the election as a representative of the Southern Africa region, was unopposed in Wednesday's vote. His only rival, Yeremiah Chihana, a candidate from Malawi, was disqualified because his nomination papers were rejected for not meeting minimum requirements. In his acceptance speech, Charumbira, the fifth president of Africa's legislature, vowed to return the parliament into its former glory as the continental legislature, not a boxing ring as it resembled in the aborted elections last year.
I will promote adherence to the principles of good governance, democracy, human rights, international humanitarian law, peace, stability, and all objectives of the Pan-African Parliament. So, help me God.
With the continent facing multiple challenges that include political instability, Charumbira committed to leading the parliament in silencing the guns. Corruption, poverty, unemployment, hunger, and gender inequality are also some of the problems he has promised to tackle. The House's election was aborted last year after it ran into chaos and violence, with members arguing over the electoral process. The Pan-African Parliament is divided into five regions: West, East, Central, North, and South. each of the first three already have held the presidency, so they were eligible to contest this vote under the African Union's principle of rotational leadership. In his congratulatory message to the incoming president, African Union Chairperson Moussa Faki Mohamed called for peace in the house and hard work towards the development of the continent.
We are at a turning point in our history, and it is only when we are united, in spite of our diversities and different views, let us not forget to ensure that we can get to the Africa we want.
Countries in Southern Africa welcomed Chalumbila's election. However, there are mixed reactions from Zimbabwe. Kenneth Mandaza, a spokesperson for Zimbabwe's ruling ZANU-PF, told VOA that Chalumbila's appointment is a proud moment for the country.
This is an indication of the confidence that people have in the ruling party in Zimbabwe's ZANU-PF, and the confidence that they also have in Zimbabwe. And that's a vindication on our part.
However, some people in Zimbabwe's opposition, which accuses ZANU-PF of repressing its critics, are unhappy. The South African chairperson of Zimbabwe Citizens Coalition for Change party told VOA that it's a perfect move, but with a wrong candidate.
It could have been better if we had a representative who does not come from a party whose hands is full of blood, whose hands is full of murder.
The Pan-African Parliament plays an advisory role to the African Union. It will become a legal legislative body once 28 countries have ratified what is called Malabo Declaration, making it a formal lawmaking body. Thuso Khumalo for VOA News, Johannesburg.
You're listening to Africa News Tonight. I'm Ihayus Wuhib in Washington. To all our VOA listeners, please note we have moved our programs from voanews.com to voaafrica.com. There, you'll find all your favorite VOA radio and TV programs and a whole lot more. Find us on voaafrica.com. Talks on resolving Libya's political crisis ended today in Geneva without making enough progress to move towards elections. The talks between the House of Representatives and High State Council legislative bodies were aimed at establishing a constitutional basis and arrangements for elections. Many Libyans fear that a failure to set a path to elections and resolve a dispute about control of an interim government will thrust the country back towards territorial division or conflict. Since the planned December election was postponed, Libya's rival factions have been in a standoff over control of the government, with both sides backed by armed forces. United Nations Libya advisor Stephanie Williams said that in the Geneva talks and earlier meetings in Cairo, the two sides had resolved some disputes over the future legislature and the powers of the president. However, she says, disagreements remain on who can run in the presidential elections. The United States has announced a $63 million U.S. dollar package for Zambia that covers support for democratization efforts, trade, and food aid. Samantha Power, the administrator of the U.S. Agency for International Development, announced the package in Lusaka, where she is on a three-day visit aimed at strengthening ties between the two countries. It is the first high-level visit in almost a decade. Kathy Short reports from Lusaka, Zambia.
USAID Administrator Samantha Powers says a $30 million U.S. dollar trade and investment program is aimed at helping Zambian agricultural enterprises boost productivity and increase regional exports.
We, USAID, will also contribute resources, about $4 million, in the narrow democratization space. Mr. President, that we are going to invest an additional $9 million to help Zambians deal with the immediate effects of the high food, fuel, and fertilizer prices that they are facing. The other thing we announced today is a new $30 million trade boost program. I just want to stress on behalf of President Biden that we are here with you through thick and thin to support you.
At the event with Power, Zambian President Hakainde Hichilema reiterated his government's commitment to enhancing good governance and transparency.
A lot more has happened, and since we took office, I think the USAID under your leadership, under the Biden administration, has given more support outside of this framework. And we are grateful for that. We don't want to use the fight against corruption to victimize anybody. So we'll be professional, to be within the law. But it will also be past corruption, present and future.
The United States and Zambia have had close relations since the 1960s. The U.S. has said its goals include helping Zambia reduce widespread poverty and build a well-governed democracy that contributes to regional stability. I'm Kathy Short for VOA News in Lusaka, Zambia.
A leading African research institute says a perfect storm of conditions is driving an unprecedented increase in human trafficking on the continent. Darren Taylor has more from Johannesburg.
The Institute for Security Studies in Pretoria reports that more organized crime groups are getting into the business of selling people.
Human trafficking is the biggest organized crime in Africa and also in the world. But our situation in Africa is really, really serious, more than any other region, because of the poverty and the conditions that many people find themselves on the continent.
Senior researcher Martin Ewe says the crime is lucrative and low risk, as most police focus on more traditional crimes such as narcotics smuggling. In 2014, the International Labour Organization estimated criminals make about $150 billion a year from human trafficking. Rights groups say today this figure's much higher. The United Nations says many governments are in denial about the crisis of human trafficking, and in some countries where it's rife, there's never been a single court case related to the crime. Ewe says this means people traders are becoming more brazen, especially in Africa.
The traffickers go from door to door. They identify vulnerable population, mostly very, very poor people. And sometimes they could be people who have gone to school but do not have jobs. The trafficker will convince them that we are able to provide you jobs. In some cases, we've seen girls being trafficked that they'll go and serve as models in America or in Europe or in other countries where they believe that they will earn a lot of money.
Ewe says the so-called modeling contracts quickly turn into sex work. His research shows huge price increases in basics such as food are plunging more Africans into poverty, allowing trafficking to thrive.
It's going to render more individuals desperate, so it's going to actually increase the pool of vulnerable population in Africa, where a lot of individuals will become very, very amenable to manipulation.
In the recent past, says Ewe, it was almost exclusively black Africans being trafficked. Now, he says, Africans of all races are being targeted.
People are trafficked or smuggled from Africa into other countries where they end up in Europe, in the Middle East especially, to do prostitution or in other countries. They serve in homes where they are enslaved like laborers. They do all sorts of chores and inhumane and degrading work that other people will not do.
He's also coming across many more cases of internal trafficking, where people are bought and sold to work in nearby countries or even within their own countries. Ewe says sexual exploitation remains the primary reason behind human trafficking, but more people, especially men and boys, are being trafficked to work on farms and in factories. For VOA News, I'm Darren Taylor in Johannesburg.
And that wraps up this edition of African News Tonight. I'm Yehiyas Wuhib in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. On behalf of our producer, Mokbilia Baro, and our engineer, Patrick Deya, thanks for choosing The Voice of America.